Army veteran Pat D'Amico is the founder and CEO of About Face Development and has over 30 years of leadership and training experience. He is a master facilitator and a graduate of the Berkeley Executive Coaching Institute. His firm, About Face Development, is focused on bringing its clients customized solutions to advance performance. Coming up next on Veteran on the Move.
Welcome to Veteran on the Move. If you're a veteran in transition, an entrepreneur wannabe, or someone still stuck in that J-O-B trying to escape, this podcast is dedicated to your success. And now, your host, Joe Crane.
Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union can help you earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than your standard savings accounts with competitive rates. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. All right, we're talking with Army veteran Pat D'Amico, founder and CEO of About Face Development. Pat, thanks for being here today. Looking forward to hearing your story. Take us back. Tell us what you did in the Army.
All right, Joe. Well, first, thanks for having me. So I enlisted actually in the Army right after graduating from high school in 1985. And as a part of that, I competed for an Army scholarship, which I was fortunate enough to earn. So I ended up at Valley Forge Military Academy in the early commissioning program. So at the end of my sophomore year, I received my commission as a second lieutenant and then finished my degree after that before going on active duty. So I entered active duty in 1989. Yeah.
Okay. What was the name of the school?
I went to Valley Forge Military Academy, which is in Pennsylvania, the Valley Forge, Pennsylvania area.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's awesome. I don't know if I've ever met anybody that's taken that path. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, smaller schools. It was founded in 1928. It's actually, they have a high school there as well, but there's an early commissioning program for the college. So, you know, it allows folks that are prior service or like myself that, you know, had an accelerated commissioning program.
Awesome. And then what'd you end up doing in the Army?
Well, I got in, it was an interesting time, although, you know, I got an Army scholarship and I always say, you know, I got a lot out of the Army. I think they might've gotten more out of me. So I deployed to Panama immediately after the invasion, when things were kind of a disaster. I was a military police officer. So our responsibility was sort of forming the new Panamanian police force immediately following the invasion. So I spent a few months there. And then I also deployed to for the first Gulf War. So I deployed to Saudi Arabia and was in Saudi Arabia and Iraq during the first Gulf War. And then I also did a deployment to Cuba, to Guantanamo Bay, which is a little bit, you know, unusual during the Haitian migrant crisis in the early 1990s. I spent a handful of months in Guantanamo Bay, which was an interesting assignment because as an Army unit, you're on a post that's commanded by a Marine general and primarily Navy and Marines and working with the UN and some other, you know, organizations that were in there. So so that was a pretty interesting assignment.
Wow. Yeah. So on your way out of the Army, were you prepared to transition out? Would it come as a surprise to you? How did that go for you?
Yeah, well, I actually ended up, I was in my advanced course at Fort McClellan as a captain. And I had been offered an opportunity to stay there as an instructor, but ended up transitioning out. So back then in the early 90s, it was, you know, a lot of these recruiting firms were becoming very popular, especially for junior military officers, for first lieutenants and captains. So I hooked up with one based in Florida, did a number of interviews, and ended up taking a job with Johnson & Johnson at the time.
Walk us through a little bit about your civilian career post-Army.
Yeah. Well, I've had a pretty non-traditional career. So I started in sales in the pharmaceutical sector, not a job I loved, but I did that job for about 2.5 years, went through the management and leadership development program, and then ended up getting an unusual opportunity. Somebody approached me and said, hey, look, you know, at the time, Johnson & Johnson did centralized recruiting for all functions except for sales, but they gave us money for a pilot for 6 months to centralize sales recruiting for the U.S. You know, I was trying to get back up to the Northeast where I, you know, had grown up. And so it was an opportunity. They moved me and they said, hey, look, we have money for 6 months. And if it works out, then you have a permanent job. And if it doesn't, we'll just find you, you know, a management job locally. So department ended up, you know, getting funded, ended up being approved. So I did that for about 5 years, actually, total. So I worked in the recruiting function. And during that time, I significantly expanded the recruitment of, you know, of military folks, especially into sales jobs in J&J. It had been, you know, there had been some organization. J&J was a big organization, right? There were 161 operating companies. And A handful of them did quite a bit of military recruiting, but the bulk didn't. So I put a number of programs in place to do that. After that, and the best thing about that job was I worked with all the J&J companies. So I got sort of a look at everyone and got to pick where I was going next. So I ended up transitioning to the medical device sector. And that's really where I've spent the bulk of the last 30 years. So I was in, I did a sales operations job, was a sales manager in New York City for a number of years. I did a marketing stint. I always tell people it's good to know what you're not good at. I did a year in marketing. I'll never wonder if it would have been a great job for me because it was, I didn't like it and I wasn't very good at it. So, and then it was after that that I really transitioned into training and development. I left J&J after 15 years to take a job as a VP of commercial operations for a startup in the medical device sector and handled training as well as corporate accounts and a number of different areas there. And then we were bought by, that company was bought by Medtronic, which you may be familiar, it's the biggest medical device company in the world. So when I transitioned to Medtronic, was really when I primarily, my career became fully focused on learning and development. And so I handled all skills training for sales and then also leadership and management development. And my passion, Joe, is really always has been leadership and management development from the time I, you know, joined the Army when I was 17. So after spending about 8 years then at Medtronic, I was working remotely because I live in the Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, the Allentown, Bethlehem area.
Oh, yeah.
And I had been based out of California for a while. I'd been based out of Minneapolis for a while, but didn't matter because I was traveling. So they were fine with me being here. And then they finally came to me and said, hey, look, it's kind of time for your next role and you got to move to Minneapolis. And nothing against Minneapolis, but it wasn't a move I was really looking to make. I'd grown up in Buffalo, New York, so I've seen enough winters for four lifetimes, I would say.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we're finish that up, and then we're going to start talking about your development and where this entrepreneurship bug came from. Be right back.
Awesome.
Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you could start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money anytime, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement? Maybe you want to consolidate debt. You could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing costs, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Both options could help make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loans subject to approval. All right, back talking with Army veteran Pat D'Amico, founder and CEO of About Face Development. So, Pat, you've had a great civilian career post-Army. You did some great things in the Army, got to see a lot of stuff. I mean, you had like three contingency type operations, Panama. I remember watching that one on TV, and Haiti. And here we are looking at Haiti again, and Desert Storm. So, and since the Army, you've had a great civilian career working for some great companies up until now. So, where did this entrepreneurship thing come from?
Yeah, well, when my employer kind of approached me and said, hey, look, for your next role for promotion, you have to move. It wasn't something I was interested in, so I started looking at, you know, other roles in corporate because my location was good for that. And then I sort of stepped back and I was like, you know, do I really want to go do the same thing again that I've been doing? And I was approached by a consulting organization that came to me and said, hey, look, we know your passion is leadership and management development, and we'd really like to build that out. So it was kind of perfect timing for me to sort of make a move on my own, which is a little unusual in my space. Most folks spend the majority of their careers in industry, or they do a couple years in industry and then go out as a consultant. I spent 25 years in the industry and then came out as a consultant. So you know, it was good timing for me. I turned 50. My father had passed. I had a couple major, you know, life changes, and I was like, I think this is something that I'd like to do. So and it was just a great opportunity to kind of go out on my own, you know, and sort of take that leap, which can be scary, right? I mean, I don't know if I would say I was risk averse, but after spending 25 years in industry, you know, it's a big change. There's a lot of things that are different about being an entrepreneur and being on your own, but it was a great transition for me, and it's been a great, you know, great road since.
I mean, for you, you were in the industry and now you roll into consulting. What were some of the first things? How were you going to generate clients? How are you going to generate income?
Yeah. So, you know, for the most part, a lot of the business that I do is really generated based on relationships that I have. So when you become an entrepreneur, you really have to leverage those relationships, right, that you've built over the years, you know, going to those folks and making those connections, understanding what their businesses do, what their needs are. And my biggest thing as an entrepreneur in the business that I do, which is primarily leadership, management, development, executive coaching, is really understanding how to identify what the gaps are, right? So what I find is organizations that come to me will say, well, here's our problem. And about 50% of the time, that's accurate, right? Those are usually part of the problem. But what's interesting as a consultant is people will be really honest with you, right? More honest with me than they will someone in their own organization. I let them know up front, hey, these conversations are confidential. So they start revealing things that may be connected to what the organization thinks is wrong, but usually there's a lot of other things, you know, that get uncovered. And it's also easier for me as a consultant to go to an organization and just be very upfront and say, hey, look, you know, here's what I've discovered are some of the issues you have. Whereas somebody within the organization might be a little more apprehensive to share that.
Yeah. So fortunately, you had that network. That's one of the toughest things about going into entrepreneurship right out of the military. If you haven't started something up while you're still in the military, and if you don't have a network to lean on, if you don't have those relationships, you come out of the military and you try to start your own business, you know, unless it's something obvious like, you know, like a craft or trade that already has demand, you're kind of floating by yourself in this big blue ocean and the sharks are circling.
Yeah, and I also think that there's two things that military, you know, folks need to keep in mind. Number one is that, you know, their skills are not only transferable. A lot of times the skills they bring to the table are superior to their civilian counterparts, right? Just the discipline, the you know, a lot of times the strategic thinking. One of the things I see probably too often is folks that have spent their careers on the civilian sector tend to think very tactically, right? Everything is about, okay, what needs to be done right now in this moment. And folks from the military tend to have a background where they're thinking about what are the downstream impacts of these. They're thinking more, you know, they're trained to think more strategically in addition to tactically. So I think that's really a massive advantage. They tend to be, you know, really good at observing and understanding and looking for things that could go wrong, which is another big one. Like the organization I work in, do most of my work with, you know, the president always says to me, you know, you're always a person who's thinking about what could go wrong. You know, because, you know, sometimes when you grow up in the civilian sector, they try to train you as everything's going to be great, be positive. But you do have to be on the lookout for, okay, what could happen here? What could go wrong? What are some of the challenges we might face? So I think there's a distinct advantage there. The other thing I think too is folks getting out of the military should leverage their, you know, their veteran background, right? There are just a lot of organizations that I work with where you cross paths with people that are veterans that are frankly more, you know, very willing to, you know, hear you out, you know, looking to help veterans, looking to, you know, to support their businesses. So I found that to be a real truth.
Yeah, I see a lot of people's resumes and bios, and sometimes there's not even a mention that they were in the military. Like, why did you put that in there?
Yeah, that's interesting. I would say most of the time it's easier for me to find those folks. Usually it's pointed out, or sometimes when you meet folks, you just know.
Yeah. And I get in certain types of business, you may not want to lead with that, but certainly nothing you should be suppressing or hiding or be ashamed of by any means. So, well, talk about some of the beginning aspects of starting a business. Like, were you able to get some consulting gigs, you know, right out of the gate?
Well, for me, I was leaving a pretty lucrative job and a pretty lucrative role, right? And I was voluntarily leaving. So I didn't have the luxury. I didn't have the situation where I was let go and had to make this work. And I didn't have the luxury of leaving that job without something in place. So yeah, so I did quite a bit of work planning for my departure and transition into entrepreneurship and starting my own business. So I had a couple contracts in place arranged prior to me moving out, which is, you know, which awesome. Is something that, you know, folks really sometimes don't think enough about. If you don't think about that, then you need to really prepare for potentially being without income for a time being. And I, you know, really couldn't afford to do that. So I had made connections, said, hey, look, I'm looking to make this move. If I were to, you know, would you be interested, or what sort of, you know, what sort of work would you like to do together? So I, again, I had a couple of contracts in place, which really helped me transition, was made it much smoother.
Yeah. So talk about what's the difference between being an employee for a fairly large company versus being a consultant.
Wow. That's a big question.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people don't understand what consultants do. I mean, especially at a high level in corporate America, you know, my best friend growing up is a consultant, and it's I find it interesting. You know, you have to have the buy-in from the CEO, CEO, in order for them to come work with your company. So a lot of people don't understand what the concept of consulting is all about.
Yeah, so that's a fair question. So I can contrast the two, right? When I was working with big companies, you have a salary. You know, many of the jobs I had also had bonus on top of that. You have benefits. You have all these things that come along with that. You have resources for the organization, but you also have a lot of bosses, and you know, and you live within that environment, right? I've worked in both large companies that were very bureaucratic and had a lot of processes. I've worked in small startups where not as much, where you know, you're flying more by the seat of your pants. When you transition to, you know, being an entrepreneur, the first thing you know going in is, you know, everything's 100% commission, right? You're only eating if you're selling. So you've got to be able to, you know, to promote and to sell, you know, your services. So that's number one, because you're losing all of those benefits. So big things are things like, you know, healthcare, which, you know, for me, I use the VA system, which is, you know, great. But for my family, you know, you're now purchasing things like healthcare. None of the benefits that you experienced are there. Now, at the same time, you have a better chance of really doing the work that you love. I mean, I am fortunate because I get to do, you know, a big portion of what I do is what I'm really passionate about. So that's, you know, that's one of the big things that's a difference. I think the other thing that was the biggest, one of the biggest learnings for me was I don't come from a finance background, right? I mean, I'm pretty good with numbers, but I do not come from a finance background. So managing the books of a small business was something that I really had to learn. I got a great accountant who was really helpful. You know, we coordinated on what I was going to use to track my business. He has access. And so it makes it really great that way. So understanding the finances, understanding billing, you know, taxes, what do you do for your retirement accounts? Again, very different when you're working for a big company. You know, you're building up your retirement in conjunction or in partnership with that employer. Now it's on your own. So now you've got to figure out, okay, what are the options? What can I save? What can I put away? So managing the financial aspect was a big transition for me. Although I'd managed budgets, I never had to manage my own business and everything related to that. So that was a big transition point. But some of the softwares and things, I'm not going to lie, make it pretty easy. So that's the plus. I can't imagine doing it 30, 40 years ago where it might have all been on paper. That would have been tough.
Yeah, I remember in the beginning when I first came into this, I mean, I knew businesses, you know, survived and died based off of where they made money or not. But it was the importance, I guess, was somewhat lost on me as far as managing the books. Your business from the out, if someone's looking to buy your business or if someone's looking to establish value in your business is judged based off of spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Not that you got some cool product or service. Yeah. They don't care about that. Are you making money? Let me see your books. Let me see your cash flow statement, your balance sheet, accounts receivable, accounts payable. That's the first thing people are going to look at. And if that looks good, then they'll keep looking to see if they're interested in the rest of us. But if you don't have that, then you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. And it's something you should be looking at too as the business owner, right? You should be really paying attention to what your revenue look like, what your potential revenue look like. Because in my business, you know, most of my clients are long-term, you know, they have been with me for a number of years, but there's ebbs and flows, right? Because I'm relying on the budgets of the organization, what's available, where they are in their life cycle. Like one of my clients who's been a tremendous client for years, ran into some difficulties last year, just with the market. So, you know, so they pulled back quite a bit. So I've got to be looking for how am I going to replace that income. So it's a balance. And a lot of what I do is I deliver a lot of live in-person programs where I'm facilitating them. So for me, my calendar is what is most valuable, right? What dates am I available? When can I work with the organization? And then everything that goes into that, you know, based on what are their priorities and selling them on understanding what their challenges and gaps are, and then selling them on the importance of finding a solution for that, which is always one of the biggest challenges.
All right, so let's talk specifically about face development. I love the name, by the way, About Face, but there was one time we were considering starting a business. We were going to call it About Face, but it was totally, something totally different. So
let me ask you, so did you have a background on why you wanted to call it About Face? Because I have a little story about it.
Well, my wife was an esthetician. She wanted to open her own shop, you know, where they do facials. And I'm like, oh, you call it About Face. That's great. It was nothing more than that.
I think there's actually a couple businesses. When I was going to register the name, there are a couple businesses in the country that use the name that are related to that area. Mine's completely different, actually. The reason I named my business this was because back in the 90s when I was going to...
Colonel Hackworth.
Duty,
yep.
Yeah.
I love that book.
I read this book and it became like my Bible. And because I had been so impacted by it, I wrote to him and he wrote back. And so... that started a friendship that Hack and I had for like 20 years. It's sort of like people say, don't, you know, sometimes it's not good to meet your heroes. I would disagree on that because, you know, here is on a happenstance. I, you know, wrote him a letter and, you know, we became friends over the years. So big loss when he passed away.
That's great.
But that's the reason because it also fit, right? You look at the definition of About Face, it's a change in direction. And so it fits with what I do, right? I'm trying to get organizations to make some sort of change to help their business move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. That book had a big impact on me also. I was in a commissioning program with the Marine Corps. I hadn't gone into the Marine Corps active duty. I was still in school, but I remember reading that book. Of course, didn't really know what I was getting into, but
yeah,
that book had a tremendous impact on me too. So really something. Yeah. Sorry to hear I almost met him one time. He was actually in Kansas City when I was living there. And he was over at a liquor store and I was coming home from the airport. By the time I got there, it was already over with. He'd gone. But, and then I think he was living in Australia when he passed away, right?
He was in Australia for a while. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk specifically about face development in some more detail about what you guys do.
So I focus primarily on, I spend probably about 30% of my time facilitating programs on what I would call senior executive selling skills. So things like executive selling. So I work primarily in the medical device sector. So I might work with corporate accounts teams who are selling at the C-suite level. You know, they may be selling to hospital systems. They might be selling to your big retailers, you know, that are in the space like CVS and Walmart and, you know, but those folks. So I do advanced courses in negotiations and executive selling. But then I spend about 30-40% of my time solely focused on leadership and management development. So I'll go into an organization and look at and do an assessment. I call it a diagnostic of what's the current state of their leadership team, right? How much training have they had in the past, formal leadership or management training? And then I look at what are the gaps that are in existence? You know, where are they doing well? You know, what are the downside impacts of their lack of leadership and management, which I'll just tell you up front. Typically, you know, if an organization has a high turnover rate, and more specifically, if they're losing people, what we call an undesirable turnover, right? They're losing folks they don't want to lose. I mean, the number one reason people leave their jobs is a poor manager. So, you know, we look at what's the turnover, what's impacting that. I'll do a lot of interviews with the management team and people in the organization. And then I'll put together a long-term continuum plan of how to bring their leaders, up to snuff on, you know, certain competencies that are critical for their success.
Wow. How do you go about doing that?
So what I'll do is I'll take the data and then we'll talk about prioritization of the competencies. I did about 6 months of research on all the research on management and leadership development for the last 50 years. There's actually a ton of data, academic, industry, hybrid, there's meta-analyses. So I have a core list of 20 competencies that are necessary for success as leaders and managers. So then I'll go in the organization and I'll look at where are the biggest gaps and then we'll prioritize them. So a typical plan for an organization might be, they might bring the leadership team together once a quarter for, say, 1 to 2 days. And I'll deliver programs that are related to the priority competencies. And then in between those live meetings, will do some sort of reinforcement. That might be everything from short videos that they watch. We'll do synchronous, you know, calls like this on Zoom, where we'll have the management team, we'll do best practice sharing, we'll do case studies, things like that. So, and I really focused on building a long-term plan, because a lot of organizations, like, as much as I hate turning down business, some organizations might come to me and say, look, you know, we've got this meeting coming up, can you come do 4 hours? That's not what I do, right? I am focused on, let's identify what the gaps are and put in a long-term plan, because leadership and management development is a never-ending journey, right? There's no finish line. Yeah. It always needs to be getting done. And, you know, then you get into first line versus second versus third line leaders. There are nuances to those. So I work with the organization to put a plan in place that is realistic for them, which is one of the biggest challenges. A lot of times organizations want to do too much, right? They want to do too much too fast. And so I'll dial them back and say, look, you're not doing anything now. So, you know, let's get started here and let's really focus on what are those competencies that are most lacking, that are really holding you back the most. And then we'll, you know, we'll train them up and develop skill in those. And that just, that process just keeps rolling.
How long do you typically like to work with a client?
Indefinitely, ideally indefinitely. So I may put in place a plan and then, you know, let's say it's a 2-year plan. You know, by the time you're getting halfway through, you've got new leaders and people that are being promoted, or the business has changed. So it's some sort of continuous program. Now, I may get to a point in an organization where, you know, we've done a lot of the competency work, but we'll start doing more things in depth, like case studies, or, you know, I'll build something specific for them to work through, for the leadership and management team to work through. So, but ideally, it's long-term. I have clients that have been with me since I started. Really, all the clients that I had, every client I've picked up over the years is still with me, other than one that sort of folded during COVID. It was a startup. But for the most part, you know, I'm looking for the organization, as they should, making a long-term commitment to developing their leaders and their managers.
So you're basically the leadership and development shop of a lot of companies.
For most, yeah, because most organizations, I mean, depending on the size of the organization, some big organizations have their own. So I may just come in and do content, but they may manage the program. But most organizations don't have anything in place. And most organizations don't have the expertise in the human resources or the training department to really design, develop, and run a program.
Right.
So that's really where my expertise comes in, because I've done this in organizations already in roles, and it's what I do all the time. So, you know, so it's when organizations come to me, usually it's they have a lack of expertise in the organization, or folks that are trained. Like, I'm also an instructional designer, so I'm at a distinct advantage. Most facilitators deliver content that they didn't design. I happen to be one who designs and delivers my own. It makes me much more familiar with it, which is a huge advantage.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that the military is one of those few places that has a constant leadership and development program in place, working every day. Like, every day in the military, you're constantly being judged on how well did you lead today? Not how competent you were in your actual job. How well did you lead your people today?
Yeah. And that's a massive difference in the private sector. So one of the things I always share with folks in organizations is, you know, in a 20-year career in the military, let's say as an officer, in a 20-year career, you're going to spend about 3 years just in leadership development programs. And then in addition to that, most of those, you're not going to have a job while you're there, right? If you're going to your basic course, going to your advanced course, you're going to the war college. All of those, you're doing that and you are a full-time student of that program. So now you get 3 years of that in 20 years. Now you go to the private sector. Not only is leadership and management development almost non-existent, you'll never touch anywhere near 3 years, but any program you do go to, you also have a job that you're managing. So, you know, that becomes a real challenge, right? If I've got people together for 3-4 days, I know that they're also having to manage a job on the outside. So it's one of the things that I really use when I'm selling to clients, to say, look, this is the minimum you should really be doing. If you compare it to, you know, organizations like the military that are very focused on leadership, okay, don't expect you to be there, but now look at this contrast. You know, you're doing nothing at all,
yeah,
and you're putting these people in leadership positions, and you really need to prepare them better.
And, you know, so a lot of military people think that the military is the only place that knows or understands leadership. And that is absolutely not true. Leadership is universal. Everybody can recognize great leaders and everybody can recognize bad leaders. And a lot of times in the military, our leadership experience comes, we learn from bad leadership examples or bad leadership experiences. Civilians respond very well to great leaders and great leadership programs once they get on board with it. So this is where the, I always say there's a great divide between, there's like veterans on one side of the canyon, and there's these companies that want to hire veterans on the other side of the canyon. I call this the great divide. They can't find each other. If they do see each other, they can't get across that canyon because veterans, because of their leadership experience, they know they could do that job if you just put me in there and give me a chance. But the civilian sector hires based off of hard skills. And the military has a phenomenal amount of soft skills. The veterans have phenomenal soft skills, which is all this leadership. And the two don't talk well to each other. The two don't translate to a resume properly. And if you, oftentimes when you, if you can put the, and so what ends up happening is the veteran that has the great looking resume with the hard skills on it, whether it be, you know, the MBA or the Six Sigma qualifications, all these 3 and 4 letter identifiers after their name on the resume, they hire that person because they got the hard skills. They didn't realize that person happens not to have very many of the good soft skills. And then other times they'll, you know, they hire the great soft skill veteran, like, holy cow, this guy's killing it. But he didn't have any hard skills. How is this guy doing so well?
Yeah. And I think the private sector too often makes, in my experience, makes exactly the same mistake, right? Somebody's been successful as an individual contributor. We're just going to promote them without assessing their leadership and management skill. But I think my thought on that is there are organizations out there, and I think this is growing, that are more focused now on identifying those soft skills. You know, I think this is a good time to be coming out of the military, going to the private sector, because more organizations are focused on, okay, what are we really trying to accomplish here? And I hear more organizations say, look, we can teach them what they need to know, but we can't teach them the inherent skills or things like leadership management. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to take somebody out of the military and take somebody in the civilian sector. The likelihood you'll ever train that person who spent their career in the civilian sector to a level of leadership skill that the military person is you know, probably non-existent. It's gonna be very difficult just because in the military, so much of what you do is, to your point, based on your leadership skill and developing your leadership skills. So I think there's a lot of organizations, definitely more today than I've ever seen before, that are sort of looking and going, hey, look, we know we can train people, right? Because organizations do a tremendous, here's the other thing, organizations do a tremendous job of training people on how to do their job, but they lack in training them on those soft skills and how to lead. So there's a great need and an opportunity of, hey, if I can find somebody that has those leadership skills that can learn, we can teach them what they need to know to do the job. And I remember, you know, going back, I mean, there were organizations, I mean, I remember, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but when I was getting out of the military, Schneider Trucking, they had this massive focus on hiring people from the military. And their approach was, these folks are coming with skills that we'd never be able over time to train them up in, but we can train them about our business. Right. So looking for those organizations that value those, I think is important. And I also think there's more organizations today that are looking for that. Because I hear a lot of organizations saying, look, I can find a million people that come from the industry that know how to do the job, but you know, I'm looking for somebody who I can promote and develop. And people from the military are, you know, they're really gifts to those organizations, because if they don't have a great leadership and management development program, which most don't, you know, they're looking for that skill because they know they're not going to get that training.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Pat, how do we find out more about FACE Development?
Easiest is just go to aboutfacedevelopment.com or check me out on LinkedIn, which I'm pretty active on.
Awesome. And with your experience in, you know, leadership development and entrepreneurship these days, very successful. If somebody's looking to get out of the military and get into entrepreneurship, what kind of advice comes to mind?
The first one is plan and be very thoughtful about what sort of business and what you're going to offer, right? I think where folks fail is going out and saying, I'm going to offer all of this, right? Because I never trusted, I will tell you, when I was in the private sector, I never I never trusted organizations that came and said, hey, just tell us what your problem is and we can fix it. That's not possible, right? So I've found over the years that being very specific about what your expertise is and admitting what your expertise isn't, which builds a lot of trust. Like I'll go to clients and say, look, I'll tell you what I can help you with. If we find something, you know, that I can't help you with, I'm going to tell you and I'll help you find somebody that can. But really honing in on what's the expertise you bring to potential customers and being very specific to that market, because people want to work with experts, right? I mean, people want to work with people that they feel really know the area that they're in. It's why I tell clients, here's what I can help you with and here's what I can't, because I think that goes a long way.
Awesome. Great advice. Well, Pat, thanks for sharing your veteran successful entrepreneurship success story. Look forward to seeing your future success.
Thanks, Joe.
All right. These two veterans are Oscar Mike. Thank you for listening to Veteran on the Move, your pathfinder to freedom. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are always greatly appreciated. So until next time, this veteran is Oscar Mike.